Welcome to the Sum of It All Cultivating Mathematical Hearts podcast. I'm Audrey Medeville, along with my colleagues Mark Alcorn and Kara Hetrick from the San Diego County Office of Education. And this season, we are diving into the book Cultivating Mathematical Hearts, Culturally Responsive Mathematics Teaching in Elementary Classrooms by Maria del Rosario Zavala and Julia Maria Aguirre. Transcripts to our podcasts are always available for you in the episode notes on your favorite platform. This week, we are diving into chapters 6 and 7. And chapters 6 and 7 are like a departure from what it's been the rest, you know, up to now in the book. Chapter 6, for instance, shares with us an experience about a teacher and a coach who are sitting down to design a lesson using the culturally responsive mathematics teaching tool, or as the authors abbreviated, the CRMT2. It's a very different vibe. And even though the lesson is set in first grade, there was so much to learn from it. So I'm excited to chat about it with the both of you today.
Oh, for sure, Audrey. And I really liked reading about how a coach and an educator are really trying to figure out how to make sure that this lives best for their students. And I just want to read a quick quote from chapter 6 on page 125. And it says, "We were excited to provide students with some real world math opportunities in a way that moved beyond story problems while also paying attention to how we were becoming culturally responsive." So this idea of moving beyond story problems, I really appreciate that phrase, Audrey and Kara. You know, our typical story problem segment of lessons that we have in either elementary or secondary textbooks tends to have students like jumping around from one problem to another, often in completely different contexts. You know, one minute you're in a farm and the next minute you're in outer space. There's not much thought about the context itself, and really not as much thought about the mathematics either. So I really just appreciated this example from this first grade classroom where students hang out in a meaningful context for an extended period of time. And I believe that that helps the context, and it also helps to deepen the engagement in the mathematics.
Yeah, I agree with you, Mark. I appreciate that they also leaned into like a cross-curricular kind of nature of what they wanted to investigate. Mm-hmm. The educators kind of engaged students in not only learning about mathematics, but also learning about history and some social justice issues throughout this lesson. Although it didn't feel like they needed to heavily modify the district lesson, they did actually need to modify it pretty heavily. So I'm curious about the feasibility of this type of modification for an entire curriculum. Mm-hmm. It was nice that the educators held a critical lens to their provided lessons. Like sometimes teachers are a little nervous about modifying what the district has provided, but they really leaned into that. So I appreciate that. And they also really worked to engage students in these civic issues, which was important. As districts move forward with curriculum adoptions, I'm wondering how other districts could lean into using these guidelines that the authors have delineated in this book to help design tasks with students' needs and interests in mind.
Yeah, good points, Kara. Because you know what was interesting to me is that they used the district curriculum as a way of like seeing what the intended mathematics for them to make sure that students were able to engage in and to learn about. And I think that that was great to use it for, but then they end up changing it to something really quite different, which was exciting. But at the same time, it makes me think of this challenge to support teachers and give enough time for them to develop these types of problems so mm-hmm. that they're customized for their students. And one of the things that I see that sometimes happens as we work with educators is there's sometimes a tendency for educators to get excited about this and say, is there a place that I can find where it has all these prompts already finished so that I can just jump into that website and grab them and give them to my students versus sort of that really intentional planning of like seeing what would land best with this group of students that I have at my school, in this neighborhood, in this community, and what would be best. And so I think there's that tension and that seems to be the best thing to do to customize, but how do we do this and create space for teachers to be ready to do that?
Those are good points from both of you, and I really appreciate it. So like that, you know, like how much time would this take and how hard would this be? You know, one of the elements I think that made it feel doable in my mind, and I'm curious about your thoughts for both of you, were the prompts that they used. And so they had three prompts that they kind of launched the scenario with. And if you haven't read this chapter, you got to get into this. You got to get into the scenario and the text of it. You really do. It's worth it. But the three prompts around it were: what's a rule that you think is unfair? When have you or anyone you know known been treated unfairly? And do you think kids and adults can both change unfair rules or laws? By the way, do you hear right there, like change the word kids to teens, and all of a sudden it's like a secondary lesson, friends. I just want to note, like, you see what I'm saying, like first grade, very applicable. But later on, they use prompts again when they get into like the heavier math of the content. And they talk about like, how does your group's model help us understand the magnitude of the people shown from the protest? Or how does, you know, blank's idea help us to understand estimation? Or tell me more about your group's mathematical thinking. So there's lot these prompts throughout. And it really helps, I think, push us back into that CRMT2 framework that was that they're trying to implement. Can you tell me what you thought about these, Kara? Maybe Kara, go first. What are you thinking?
Yeah, Audrey, I was really struck by the level of intentional planning that went into creating this lesson for students. And the prompts are an example of this. The educators first kind of bring up this idea on page 126 when they reference that there's this importance to how we enact the lesson. And that was really intentional about highlighting the reminder that teachers are an integral part of planning what a lesson looks like and how it is enacted. This is really clear, but what they really highlighted was that their role was importantly laid out when they looked at how their lesson was part of the CRMT2 kind of tool. They focused on anticipating and learning, anticipating the learning that they would need to support, as well as the prompts that you mentioned. And those prompts also got into the mathematics that was being infused into the lesson. So while the lesson was learning was about learning estimating, they intentionally planned how to support student learning and the conversation about the topics in the classroom as part of the task of the planning the lesson.
Yeah, for sure, Kara. And I want to also just highlight the idea of these prompts. I think that sometimes when I've started to see people making attempts in this culturally responsive space, it seems like sometimes there's a tendency just to jump right into the task that might be something that I'm really working to make more culturally responsive. I just really appreciated how those first three prompts that you read, Audrey, on page 129 are really getting me as a student into the space of thinking about fairness so that that can be moved to protest and not just going straight to protest. And I just think that was just really helpful because I think in some cases we're looking for shortcuts for prompts where we're looking for students to take action. And I think sometimes people might just switch one prompt out for another without providing these experiences that prepare students to effectively engage in the context. And then the implementation prompts that you mentioned, Audrey, that were on 139, I really like how that those are designed to make sure that we're like, what's the mathematics we're intending for students to engage in today? Like how are that going to be kind of the guardrails that keep us around the lesson goals for mathematics? And these remind me of some of the questions that I've used, and many educators that I've worked with used to activate the standards for mathematical practice here in California. In our previous framework, we had this great set of questions that were next to each of the mathematical practices. And by asking those questions, you could make sure that you're trying to make sure that those practices, specific practices, are being activated.
Yeah, I appreciate that. You know, you both are pointing out that, you know, that piece that the authors mentioned, and Carrie, you quoted it already, but they mentioned it several times in this chapter, like how we enact a mathematics lesson matters just as much as the content that's in our math lesson. Like we have to take time to think about it because our actions in enacting the lesson impact it greatly in terms of what happens and what actually shows up for our students in their learning situation. So I appreciate that. Let's move on to chapter seven. Kara, you want to share a little bit about how this chapter set up? It's different than chapter six, right?
Yeah, while chapter six was about modifying a single lesson, it feels like chapter seven was about shifting a teaching mindset. The educators identified some shifts that they wanted to make for teaching and learning, and they worked intentionally to modify their own practice to address those goals. The reflections on learning that are throughout this chapter, and the detail that the shifts that they wanted to make, were really intentional. And they addressed their essential questions, which related back to the target strands that they were interested in kind of addressing as part of their classroom. And the kind of notes that they make were reminders not only for them, but for us as well as we look at the importance of making shifts in our practice. I also appreciate that some of their planning notes are questions that they are still grappling with, showing that this work is not only continuous, but complex.
Yeah, I appreciate that too. It's a little daunting because they talk about like years one through three, and then you realize there's more years after that. And so there's that moment of like, oh my gosh, how many years is this going to take me? But I do think that it gives us enough a snapshot of like the growth that's happening over the course of the years that you can really see, like you described, Kara, that like professional growth and that shift of a mindset. And so I really appreciate you sharing that that out with us. I'm super curious about how they looked at a specific strand like Kara was talking about. Like they focused in like one of the times on disrupting status and power. But then when they got into the weeds of actually like thinking about what they were going to do about that, they mapped it backwards and said, what are the connections to these other strands? And they like, there's a map of it. It looks like a map literally because they like have arrows going backwards into other strands. There's a figure like that on 7.1, and then later in a different year they do it again in 7.4, on a figure 7.4. And in our other episodes, we've talked a lot about how these different strands really like interweave with each other, right? Like we've talked about how like they interconnect and we can see connections between them. But how did this like mapping and the way that they kind of they visualize that and then describe their thought process. How did that push your thinking or maybe help you understand better what they're talking about? Mark, you want to start off this time?
Oh, yeah, sure. So that figure 7.1 is on 146 for our listeners if you have your book handy. And just like Audrey said, I mean, it's just really nice visual representation of this, that mapping. So for the educators in the text for this particular chapter, they were starting with this idea of disrupting status and power in terms of the perceived ability of students. And how, when they started with that disruption of status and power, that led them to connecting that to scaffolding up, to sustaining high cognitive demand, and honoring student thinking ideas. So these other strands, they could see that these connections of where they could go with starting from that central idea and how it connects to these others. And I just thought it was so great because in the book, they mentioned how they wanted to disrupt the status and power relationships that all the stakeholders were used to in the school environment, whether it be teachers or students or community members, especially around the way that students are grouped within the classroom for mathematics. And I thought it was great that they started with disrupting this idea of a high group or a low math group. And these structures that were things that were just business as usual that were perpetuating inequities. And by starting with disrupting that, they saw that there was these connections to these other strands. And those other strands actually provide the guideposts for you to think about what to do next when you're disrupting that original thing. And so I just thought that was just great of how they bumped into that idea of this connection between the strands.
I totally agree, Mark. Their efforts to disrupt status and power by sustaining high cognitive demand and honoring student voices for the group of students that the district had identified as low led to so many discoveries. Like they comment on the brilliance that they heard from so many other students within their class. It was really eye-opening. They also used very intentional moves of infusing those high-quality tasks while becoming facilitators of discussion, which I really love how they call themselves facilitators of discussion. and how that helped to create a safe space where all of their students were allowed to explore mathematics and to share their strategies. I believe that when we create a space where students are challenged and that they are encouraged to share their thinking, and where all contributions are seen as valid, which sometimes can be a difficult task, that it really disrupts the power of some and allows for the participation of all of our students.
Yeah, for sure. I really like how you're emphasizing that idea of all of our students. And then how do we know that, like, that is actually impacting our students? How do we know how they're believing about their own progress and their own shifts in their own mindset? And I thought it was so cool as they moved on to this idea of affirming positive math identities for all students. How are they finding out if that's happening for the students? And I thought it was great on page 158, where they had some questions that they used to conduct student interviews. Questions like, tell me about what conversations in math sound like. How do you feel when you share an idea during math? How do you know when someone is listening to your ideas? How do you show others that you are listening to their ideas? And I just thought this was a great way to, through student interview, to start thinking about what are some changes in mindsets and how students are thinking about mathematics. Audrey, what do you think about that idea?
Yeah, I really appreciate these questions, Mark, and I'm glad you read them out. You know, this book has been so thoughtful about the questions we can ask our students. And, you know, we're playing around with this idea. We've been playing around with this idea in several spaces ever since we read Street Data. I think that was the book that really started us thinking about asking these questions to students. And one of the things I find most encouraging is that it doesn't take long to ask kids these questions, which
Yeah,
I know
right.
Sounds bizarre, but like the idea of student interviews for a secondary teacher is like, I don't know, there's something about that that just like you say that and I'm like, oh my gosh, how long is that going to take? You know, like I'm imagining like a whole week of class like gone. And so I've been trying it out in different classrooms with different groups of kids, middle school schedules, which are notoriously like short periods of time. And we can ask six open-ended questions to middle schoolers and get really robust responses and get through a whole period of kids in pretty much one single period.
Wow.
It's really close. It's really close. If you have a couple of really long talkers, you might need to take, you know, another, you know, lunch period, or you might need to extend it to a second day. But I've been really encouraged by the fact, like, it doesn't have to take a long period of time. So, you know, I've gone in side by side with a teacher and they've said, okay, this is kind of a review day. Can you interview the students? And we just step outside, we push record on a recording device, you know, and we ask the six questions. And I don't even know that you'd ask six questions. I think these four questions are great. And then you can get a whole class of data transcribed and you can look at it question by question, just like they do in the book. And you can say, what am I noticing? What am I surprised about? What do I want to change? Because I think if you read these initial ideas that came off of the students here about what they think about math class, there's some stuff that you'd want to change as a teacher. You're like, oh, I don't want that to be their perception. And when you get to what they were saying at the end of the year, you're like, we've had some growth, right? And that's a really, that's something validating. Like you could feel it in your class. You might be like, I can sense it's changing. But when you have that qualitative data there to like back you up at the end of the day, that feels really good too. So I'm all about this. I could probably take a whole nother episode to talk about it and I won't, but super glad for the extra questions in here that I'm totally going to rip off. And the way that they set that up, I loved it.
I love that you shared that, Audrey, and I am so excited to hear more about what you learn about students through these interviews. As I think about what we've talked about so far, we've talked a little bit about the estimation task that was in chapter six, and there were some other interesting tasks in these chapters. And so I was wondering, Mark, if you wanted to share a little bit about the library task.
I would love to share about the library task. I was very excited by the, I mean, I was excited by the other task as well, but I really, really loved the library task. I wanted to actually just go back in time and go back and teach elementary school again so I could do the library task. let me just share, in case your book is not in front of you, for listeners, here's the library task. How fair is our library book collection? Create a plan to help figure out if our library has enough books with main characters from different racial and cultural backgrounds. So there's a lot of things I could say on the task, and just like Audrey just said, she's going to spend a whole episode talking about student interviews. I could probably spend way too long talking about this. I'll just say a couple things, and I encourage our listeners to dive into the book and read more. But the first thing I just want to say, I absolutely love the simplicity of this task. The idea that I can just read you the task right now and you have a sense of it, I think is just really nice. But it has great potential in terms of being culturally responsive, but it also has great potential around mathematics. You probably noticed there wasn't a particular solution path of how students should go about doing this and figuring this out. So I especially like the simplicity also because I think, again, one of the things that is a challenge and a barrier for teachers is like, how do we have time to develop tasks that are going to have good access, but that'll also have the ability to engage our students in a culturally responsive mathematics task that has this level of high cognitive demand. And I think that the way that this task is set up is allows kids to be curious about something and to follow their curiosity. Is that true? Is our library really like that? And I think just that simplicity is great.
I love that, Mark. And I love that how excited you got about it. I was also very excited about it, except then I also had like the, oh man, what's the secondary version of it? Like whenever I
Oh,
read this stuff, I'm
yeah.
like, yeah, what am I going to tell the listeners is the high school or the middle school example of this? And I don't know. It's just not, it's not as easy because we don't, you know, like, well, I probably have some barriers. So I'm just going to acknowledge right off the bat, like I probably need our listeners to tell me what the thing is, because right now all I see is like the library task would be great, except for that that's with my English teacher who's two buildings away, or you know, four rooms, you know, four floors away. And if I talk about their library collection with my students, am I indicting them and their beliefs, right? So like it's probably not a library thing. Maybe it's a our school library, or maybe it's the wrong context and folks can help me. And so hit us up on social media and help me out, because what I appreciate about the things you said, Mark, is it was open, there wasn't a clear path, and it was super relevant in their classroom, right? And so what are some things I would love to know what people are thinking already in their classrooms. What fits that trifecta for you? What's the question you would ask that gets kids engaged in grade level math and engaging in these aspects of the CRMT to, you know, like that gets you really thinking about that. So I'm super curious what people would say. I know I have a lot more thinking to do. I'll keep at the draft board for it too. But I would love if folks hit us up on, you know, Twitter X or Instagram or Blue Sky or something else, and let us know what are you doing that hits that. So you know, food for thought.
Yeah, thanks for pitching that out there, Audrey. Great idea. Thanks for joining us for this episode. In our next episode, we will chat about chapters 8 and 9 and wrap up the book. Until then, best wishes in cultivating joy and justice in the mathematics classroom.